Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Oh man, Google Hangout failure a little bit just because of technical issues and stuff like that. Hi everybody, I'm Scott, and with me as always is my co-host Josh.
Hello.
Yes.
Now, I don't know why I did that.
I have no idea why you did that.
But you know what? Let's go to an Adam and Eve promo.
Let's do that. Please, if you go to Adam and Eve and after you choose your item, and you at the very end use the promo code STATIC, you get 50% off of a single item, free shipping in the U.S., 3 free DVDs, and a mystery gift.
Static at AdamandEve.com.
For a limited time, which they've wanted us to say since the beginning, and we never
except
do.
Except it's not really limited.
But anyway.
There is also the Decepticon thing with the Patreon. I'm going to keep saying it like that because it's more, much more fun that way.
I know it's more fun that way, but I want people to go to the right area, right site, and it's Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com, where you can support us directly. You just make a pledge from, I don't know, a buck a month, as low as a buck a month if you want, and hey, that's another buck we don't have to find, to as much as you are willing to give us. And it just becomes a monthly pledge, and it's really easy for you guys to do, and we've had a lot of people do that. And in return, we will record an MP3.
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff
that you get in return where you can hang out with us on Skype. Now we're not doing Google Hangouts anymore.
It just so didn't work.
I know. So Skype, you can hang out with us on for a while and ask us any questions face to face. If you want to pledge enough to be a sponsor, you get to choose a topic, which we've gotten a few of those and a few wonderful suggestions from our sponsors. And so we're going to be recording the sponsored episodes coming up here pretty soon. And or you get a voicemail for your phone. We send you an MP3 and basically there you go. You can have Scott and Josh answer your phone when it goes to voicemail. And we will be doing a different voicemail message every month. So there you are.
Yeah. And I got to ask you, now, are you a big zine guy? Were you ever big into the zines? I hate this term, but the zine scene. I know, look how funny that is. Were you ever big into
the zine scene? Well, it was the 90s, man. Things that rhymed were cool. But yes, I wasn't big into the national zines. I was big into a few zines that turned into magazines like Raygun and and Mondo. I was into Mondo, and they eventually became a magazine. But locally, especially while I was attending the University of Evansville, there was a little zine published on campus called Worms, W-E-R-M-S.
Do you want to explain what a zine is? Because this is the kind of thing. Zines are making a comeback, but they are very much, I don't want to say a relic of the 90s, but if you were not at least 15 in the 90s, this probably you missed it.
Right. If you were a teenager or attending college in the 90s, you saw at least one zine somewhere. And these are little, basically self-published. They're a step above a newsletter. Because, you know, you've got the newsletter of blah, blah, blah organization, and you're going to go out. And then the zine was kind of the underground scene of it. And it was, there was a very rebellious feel, and it's usually done on somebody's laser printer. And you know, for instance, Worms at the University of Evansville had gossip that the UE newspaper couldn't talk about because it involved administrators and stuff like that. So you had gossip and news that couldn't be reported in the paper. And I can tell you, I know who published Worms, and I can tell you that they were usually very reliable information because they worked for the newspaper at the time. And So it was definitely an underground.
Well, the name print. Even zine is derivative of magazine,
right?
And you had different formats. You had the essentially, and yes, I've seen ones that were just this side of a photocopied mimeograph handed out on the corner by a crazy man manifesto.
Right.
I've seen those kind.
Yes.
And then you had ones like Film Threat, and this is before they went to Larry Flint. So when they were an actual just self-published by Chris Gore, like Film Threat, it was a magazine. It truly was. It just still had the editorial errors and the printing mistakes. And, you know, it didn't have the professionalism of a magazine, but it had the format, the style, the look, and even the honestly competitive price.
Yeah. And in fact, what is the game? Gone Home is a game that was published recently. And if you played Gone Home, it takes place in the 90s, 95, I think, right smack in the middle of the decade. And one of the main characters was involved in making a punk rock zine.
Honestly, that there are two main kinds of zines. And not punk rock necessarily, but music zines.
Right, from punk rock, Riot Girl, all kinds of stuff.
Metal, I mean, hell, I've seen country zines. Yeah. So just music in general, and then the other one is film. Those are the two bigs. There are others. I've seen ones on action figures.
Yep.
I've seen ones on video games.
Yes.
This is the 90s. You know, we're talking Sega, Super Nintendo era here and whatnot. I've seen these, but I would say a good 90% of zines are music or movie related.
I might even go higher than that. And then the one underneath those, like I said, was the political zine and the gossip zine that at the time in the 90s, it wasn't easy to get an ultra liberal or ultra conservative voice out there. And so the young people that believed this way, whether it be ultra liberal or ultra conservative or anything like that, would put together their zines and you would just kind of find them. You know, like with Worms, that being kind of the political underground of the University of Emmonsville and everything like that, they just kind of showed up. They would be left in the cafeteria once or twice a week or left around campus here and there. And that was the hotbed of the zine culture, was universities.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And high schools.
But
there
was one, and I'm going to use the word negative, but put it in quotes, okay? One, because I do believe in free speech. So there was one very negative side effect of zines, and that was the white supremacists and black militant zines. You want to talk the hardcore political stuff, both of those were a big thing on campuses. The white supremacists would put out their own Kill Niggers zine, and the black militants would put out their Stomp Whitey zine. I've seen those.
Well, the University of Evansville didn't have those. What we had was the ultra-conservative, we want to save your soul, that would usually come in the form of a zine with a Jack Chick track attached to it, and those were left by a couple local churches.
We weren't living here at the time in this area. There was a big thing shortly after I got out of high school. So right around the 95 you were talking about in that game.
Right.
Where, and it was thicker than a newsletter, but the white supremacists were leaving their zines at the local high schools. You know, the principal would come in the morning to open up, and there's a stack of these things that were told to be handed out to the popular. Of course, he didn't, but
right.
He contacted the news. But yeah, we had the white supremacists doing that here, and then the black militants responded, "Oh yeah, Whitey can do it, so can we." And it was like, "Oh God, this is a dick waving contest, isn't it?"
IU and Ball State University both got littered by Ku Klux Klan zines that were obviously put together by younger members of the Klan at the time because they still had the right aesthetic, and the things that were cool were in them. But then all of a sudden you would read it and you'd be like, oh, wait a minute, this is a huge manifesto against the niggers and the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to that, and I mean probably weeks or days right after the Ku Klux Klan one was made, the Black Panthers created a zine of their own. And
they're not going to let Whitey get the last word
in. Yeah, no, they're not going to. Nobody is going to let anybody get the last word in. So, yeah, I saw those too.
But the majority of zines are there to... Not you usually even push a political agenda. They're there to tell you what's cool,
right.
What's not being talked about in the mainstream. That's why you had the music and the movie ones, because Entertainment Weekly is not going to cover the movies that Film Threat's going to talk about.
Right.
You know, Spin and Rolling Stone are not going to cover the stuff that Razor Cake or anything like that is going to cover. So you had to get that alternative voice out. And in a lot of cases, Scott, that was the only place you were going to hear about a lot of these really, not I don't want to use the term obscure, but up and coming bands that haven't quite hit even at the MTV level yet.
Right. And you know, and we actually had quite a few success stories out of zines. Wired Magazine. Never a zine itself, but when it comes to the technology and news, it had the aesthetic, and it was going after the same audience that zines were, only it was going after it on the technology geek side. Mondo 2000, again, didn't really start as a zine, but was a magazine with the zine aesthetic, definitely going after the cyberpunk side. Raygun was music related. And it was going after the punk and the alternative scene before alternative blew up.
I can't remember what it was called. There was one for computer hackers.
2600.
2600. I'm like, it had numbers in it. What the fuck was it?
And again, before that became a nationwide publication like it is now, granted, a little difficult to find. Actually, I think they stopped printing a few years ago. But yeah, 2600 was a zine for the longest time, and it was published either in paper form, if you had a good collection of computer savvy individuals near you that would get it, or they would publish on bulletin board systems.
Yeah, and the BBSs.
Yeah, and ironically later the internet, which was the death of the zine scene. But
then you also have, let's define a difference. What is the difference to you? We'll get into the real definition in a second, but your personal difference between a magazine, like a professional magazine, to a zine with just the four letters?
Production value was the main thing. The zine is the shot on video. I did this in my dorm room or in the film lab type movie of, hey, look, my friends and I got together and made a little horror movie. And if you want to see a zine in movie form, you can check out American Horrors. They've got the movie form of zines all over the place. Versus magazine was printed on the thicker paper. It had obviously the graphical fidelity of a true magazine, much higher production value, true colophon. Mostly, that's a huge difference is magazines often had colophons, where zines, it was like the author is Mr. Buzzkill or Mr. Ba-ba-ba or Miss Blah, and it was almost, you know, borderline anonymous depending on.
And see, when it comes to my personal definition, I disagree with you on that. I think the zine really does come down to, I agree with you on the DIY part, but I don't think production value has anything to do with it. Because look at something like Film Threat, or look at oh my God, in the 70s, the late 70s, early 80s, right after like the UFO Bigfoot craze started, there was all these UFO magazines, and they had professional looks, full color covers, editorials, contact information, etc. And these were things published out of somebody's basement. So I don't think the production value thing, that one I disagree with you on. I mean, obviously, you're entitled to your opinion. I don't hold that one. That one I consider, you know, that one we're on the line on.
This wrong opinion brought to you by Josh Hadley.
So, but then, like, what besides the paper would you call, like, the difference between the Chris Gore Film Threat and the Larry Flint Film Threat? Editorially, they were basically the same. They covered, I mean, obviously they were covering new stuff, so the technical movies changed, but they were covering the same kind of stuff in the same way. Only difference really was that with LFP, they had a larger staff and higher quality paper. Is that the only difference between the zine of Film Threat and the magazine of Film Threat?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but yeah. I mean, that's
so basically it's an aesthetic difference. Really.
It's an aesthetic difference, and it's it's a production difference too, especially with the larger staff, the ability to do more research, the ability to really get paid to do it and do it for a living. Yeah, that's the difference.
Well, what do you consider like zine when it comes to the difference in the types of criticism? Because when I see, and I'm just talking movies and music right here, obviously, the criticism is very different. Look at a magazine like Rolling Stone or Spin. They have a certain way that they'll look at the bands and they'll talk about them. Then you look at something like Maximum Rock and Roll, and you see an almost, I don't want to say childish, because that's not the right word, but
you see a less
juvenile.
You see a less professional writing style. You see a much more casual writing style in a zine. You see
much more. I hate to say opinionated.
Much more opinionated, and more than opinionated, I would say passionate.
Well, because Rolling Stone might review, you know, some punk album, and they'll be like, well, you know, it doesn't have great production values. It's kind of tinny. Maximum Rock and Roll would review it and go, the album fucking sucks.
Yeah, there's more passionate, and again, the album fucking sucks. Legitimate criticism, not very constructive, but a legitimate criticism with a lot more passion behind it. And that I think is the difference. The magazine writer, as you read their reviews and stuff, you go, okay, this guy's doing his job, and he's doing it professionally, and he may be, if he's a critic that you enjoy reading, he's doing it well. The zine writer is doing it almost as a labor of love. I love heavy metal so damn much that I want to listen to as much of it as I can and take the stuff that other people have never heard of, or the local bands that maybe don't get a label or something like that, and get the word out to other metal fans. I am passionate about this subject. And that's the difference that I think you really come across in writing styles alone.
Well, then there's also the difference in legalities. Because one of the big things that, like, just to keep the Maximum Rock and Roll Rolling Stone thing going, is Rolling Stone can get sued for libel.
Right.
If they say something that they know to be untrue.
Right.
Maximum Rock and Roll almost has a reputation of being like the Fox News of music news. Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. It's in Maximum Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big difference is, I mean, yes, technically it would still be libel, but what are you going to get out of suing Maximum Rock and Roll?
Like 50 cents.
You know, because, I mean, I remember the Jello Biafra controversy where they reported how Jello Biafra was driving around in a big, expensive foreign car, and he was living like a rock star while at the same time trying to get money for his company, and he got beat up at a show because of the lie that was told in Maximum Rock and Roll. Now, if that exact same lie had been told in Rolling Stone,
Rolling Stone probably
would have sued them.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Whereas Maximum Rock and Roll, all you can do is bitch at them.
That's right.
But then you also have, especially when it comes to, well, no, this still qualifies for both film and movie. The zines,
film and music?
Well, yeah, film and music, sorry.
Okay.
The zine tends to kind of take what we now know of as the internet critic model. We're looking for the negative. How often in a zine do they tell you about an awesome underground movie or this amazing new punk band? It's usually, this is all the stuff that sucks.
It depends on the publication. Because, and again, smaller zines, I have seen them pick up, especially I tend to remember one that floated around the high school for a while, and I forget what it was called, but it was being published while I was in high school, and I remember them picking up the Guns N' Roses album.
Appetite for Destruction, the first one from 87?
No, not Appetite. No. This would have been close to our senior year.
Then that would be Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Yeah, I was going to say the orange and blue covers.
Use Your Illusion.
Yeah, Use Your Illusion. And they were absolutely raving about how wonderful it was and how great it was, and at the same time, they also talked about a local band in Muncie called Freaks of Nature, which was a local kind of an anarchist punk band / art rock band that they absolutely raved about. At the same time, they would talk about Poison and Metallica and some other bands, and they were like, these people fucking suck, and here's why. So there was a balance there.
But is that balance necessarily a good thing? Because let's look at, just we'll stick with, you brought up heavy metal. Let's stick with the difference between, say, and I really do not like Maximum Rock and Roll, but Maximum Rock and Roll and, say, Rip Magazine. Whereas Rip Magazine is getting the, I don't know if screener is the right word for a CD, but, you know, the screeners for the albums, and they've got the advertising from the album companies and whatnot. Even, you know, say Poison put out the worst album of all time. Rip might give it a slightly negative review, but they're not going to tear into it. Whereas Maximum Rock and Roll might. There's a little more honesty. Like, that's the one thing I always saw about Film Threat.
I wouldn't say there's more honesty. I would say that there's less of a filter.
There's more credibility? No, credibility is not even the right word.
Credibility, no. Like I said, with less professionalism, which, let's face it, something like Maximum Rock and Roll has less professionalism than Rolling Stone or EQ or any of the other
Spin or anything. Yeah,
Spin, anything out there. With less professionalism comes less of a filter, less of an editor, less of, you know, but more passion. And so while Spin or Rolling Stone or whatever might give it a slightly negative and legitimate review, they kind of go, here's why, you know, as a music aficionado, as an authority on music, because I've been to music school.
Rolling Stone has some of the most, especially in the 70s, they had pompous, some of the most pompous, overblown, self-filating critics ever.
Right. And so you get this pomposity, and the professional critic is, honestly, they're a little bit afraid of pissing off the label. Let's say
Virgin.
Sure. There we go. Virgin. I don't know who the hell. And let's say Virgin picks up the Backstreet Boys Reborn 2014. And it's a whole new Backstreet Boys, and they put out an album on Virgin Records. And Rolling Stone and Spin know that they're getting the critics' release, or the critics' copy, you know, an advanced copy in order to, sorry about that. But, you know, they're getting an advanced copy, and they don't want it to honk off these people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to worry about this stuff. And versus, you know, once the zines get it on their end, and once it's already been thrown out, I apologize, I was shutting down Skype. Once they get it on their end, they don't care. So again, like I said, there's less of a filter, less of a worry about pissing off a label.
They're also not answerable to an advertiser.
That's right.
You know, they don't have to worry that Virgin bought $2,000 worth of ads in this issue. We kind of got to play nice with them.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, while you've got that arguable more honesty, you also have the much more obvious bias as well.
Yeah. You know, if they review and they think that the Dead Kennedys are the greatest thing in the world, and they tell you so in the magazine, and there is no band that will be better than the Dead Kennedys it just can't happen. When they get their hands on, say, a Poison album, or I don't know, a Backstreet Boys Reborn 2014 album, you can't listen to Dead Kennedys and then listen to Backstreet Boys and be able to not have a bias there.
But then at the same time, with the zine, you also have you do have an honesty with some zines, where they do tell you right up front, like, I'm going to go back to Film Threat. They told you, we will take any screeners, we'll take any advertising, but that doesn't guarantee you a good review. If your movie sucks, we're going to say it.
Right.
You know, which, you're never going to see Fangoria do that. You're never going to see Fangoria go, we'll take your advertising, but if the movie sucks, we're going to say that. No, it's always, we'll take your advertising, and trust me, there's some stuff out there. I'm not saying this as a fact. I'm saying this as a 99% I can prove fact, that if you buy an ad in Fangoria, if you buy so many ads, you're guaranteed a positive review.
I was going to ask, didn't they get in trouble for that a while back, where it was a movie that was obviously terrible, and I don't know the exacts of the situation. I don't know what movie it was or anything like that, but it was a terrible movie. It was a universally, critically, and fan panned movie, but Fangoria absolutely raved about how great it was, and then on the very next page was like a full page ad for the movie or something.
Fangoria does that all the time. Well, actually, there you go. Yeah, Fangoria does that constantly. That if, and like I said, there's some things working right now, but basically if you buy ads, you are guaranteed a good review because they have no journalistic integrity whatsoever. So in a way, the zine is more honest because they are not beholden to an advertiser. Even if they carry advertising, in most cases, a zine that'll carry advertising, they'll still rip the advertiser if they deserve it.
Yeah.
And then while talking about music ones, I want to talk about Razor Cake. Razor Cake is one of, I like the zine. I think it's a good one. It's relatively balanced. I don't agree with all of their reviews, but at the same time, I shouldn't have to.
No,
but I just wanted to give a little push to Razor Cake because I think it's a really good alternative punk rock zine, and they accomplish the one thing every zine wants: not being bought, but getting tax exempt status. They're the only one I can think of that actually got the tax exempt status, and they're a nonprofit and they're a punk rock magazine. That's pretty fucking cool, honestly.
And the way they got that tax-exempt status is they are providing a service to people.
Yeah, they're essentially providing a public service. I'm sure it's way more nuanced than that.
Yes.
But essentially, that's what it comes down to. But then, for the second half of the show, let's move from zines as we've been talking about. What happened to the zines in the 90s? I don't necessarily agree with this, the next thing I'm going to say, but this is what I've heard. I've heard so many people say blogs became the new zine. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think blogs helped hurt them, but I don't think they morphed into the blog.
Well, no, I can't say that they morphed into
but
the blog.
But that's the argument I've seen again and again and again.
Okay. Publishing a zine from a financial standpoint wasn't cheap. It wasn't too expensive, and that's why people
especially
were
if
able
you got
to
a
do
little
it.
Bit of advertising especially, could usually yeah. break even,
right? But it wasn't cheap. Publishing online was cheap, if not free. And online, you can go, okay, I can write for this zine, and we can kind of be a team of people, or people can follow me and just me, and I'm the greatest thing in the world.
An ego stroke?
An ego stroke happened quite a bit. I think that blogs hurt zines a lot because people went, why should I publish in paper form? Why should I do this? Why should I bother putting time into a layout and printing and putting artwork in and stuff like that when I can go online and do it cheap, if not for free?
But nowadays, I actually think it as easier to publish a zine. Think about it, Scott. With POD, you're not out anything other than your time. With POD, it's print on demand, people. With POD, you only get charged when someone orders a copy.
Right.
And so, to me, it's actually financially safer to POD it nowadays than you were back then. I know Mike White has got a garage full of unsold Cashiers Du Cinemart issues just sitting in his garage because he had to print X amount of copies,
right?
And he only sold Y amount of copies.
Right, right.
You don't have to worry about that with POD, do you?
No, you don't. And that's where you mentioned it before we started talking. You call it, what was it, the revenge of print?
The revenge of print started a few years ago where quite a few zines have come. Some print on demand, some with the old 90s style of I'm going to order 500 copies and fucking hope I can sell them all. And in all honesty, I think revenge of print was a great thing. I think that's a great idea. And in the same way that we're circling back, Scott, how albums are in chic now. VHS is arguably more bigger now than it was in the mid-90s.
Me, I don't know about that. It's got a good cult following, but I don't know.
Laserdisc, old classic cart games. All this stuff is cycling back, as it's wont to do every 15, 20 years, as we've talked about before. Right. And zines are also included in that. People want these again. They don't want the fucking PDF zines. Those, I mean, like Mike for Cashews Do Cinemart, the PDF version's free, and yet he's still got people that are paying to get the zine from him.
Well, there's...
Because the PDF, it doesn't feel the fucking same, Scott, you know?
Well, it's the same argument of, do I read this book on an e-reader or an iPad or something like that, or do I go out and get the book?
But at the same time, with the audience cares, though. Because, like, I've seen quite a few of these zines that'll put out, like, the Kindle version for free, or you can pay $3.99 to buy this, and the people still pay the $3.99 to buy it because they care. I think the audience is coming back too, Scott.
Well, this is it's part of the bigger picture. And we talked about this a little bit in the DIY, and that is with print on demand and with this, you know, this new model that we have, there is something to tangibility. And let's be honest, when it comes to zines, there is something to being able to hold that in your hand and leaf
smell
through
the paper and have the ink come off on your thumb and
leaf through it while you're pooping, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, there is something to that tangibility, and that's something that I'm liking seeing coming back. Zines are coming back. I can tell you from I went to Chaoticon, which was a little tiny little role playing type of con, gaming con that happens on the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And I was very, very happy to be walking through the student center on my way to this convention. And I saw two different zines laying out. Files ready, free, take one. I didn't because I looked at them and they were all internal UWGB stuff that I didn't know about. And it was like,
This is made for the populace. They couldn't.
Yeah, they couldn't come out and name people because they were accusatory and stuff. But it was obviously here's a hypothetical story. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know,
hypothetical. When you put hypothetical in quotes, does that still make it hypothetical?
That makes it hypothetically hypothetical.
Which is a double negative, which makes it then true?
Yes.
Or am I overanalyzing the grammar of that?
Yes, you're doing both. But that's, you know, I was happy to see those back, or maybe they never left and I kind of fell out of the, you know, the whole educational system and all of academia. But I was happy to see those, and I was happy to see that there were two, which means that's something versus, you know, go here, download this.
I don't know. It doesn't feel the same. Like I'll look at the zines that I've got in my collection. And I personally like the ones that are magazine like, cause you know, you got some of those digest size ones and then you have ones that are like a book. And I don't know that those just don't feel right to me. Those, but you know, if that's what they want to publish, fine. They just don't feel right to me.
Honestly, the ones that I like are the ones that are, you know, this guy obviously printed it out on his printer and he's folded them together. And these were big when, do you remember the Riot Girl movement?
No.
And that's that GRRRRRRRL.
Oh God.
Riot Girl of the 90s.
I was about to say that. I mean, yes, 90s?
It was
cuz that was the 90s with the grammar, but yeah. Okay.
When you had alternative and to some extent punk make a resurgence in the 90s, one particular side of this was the all girl band who was singing for girl power, et cetera, et cetera. The punk version of
the Spice Girls.
The Spice Girls, exactly. And it was the, you know, I have a vagina, fuck the establishment was what, you know, was basically Riot Girl in a sentence. And
that sounds like radical feminism.
It kind of was, but they didn't have the same kind of message as radical feminists today. They weren't. Anyway, as the Riot Girl came up, the Riot Girls, you know, it was the mixtape and the zine. That was how they promoted themselves. And that's just the way it was. And I like that aesthetic. This is somebody that is passionate about this. They put together this thing and they printed it out, and it's obviously done on printer paper with, you know, somebody took a JPEG or whatever and just made it slightly askew and threw it in for the layout and stuff. It's not in color. I love that aesthetic of things.
Well, and see, like, two of the ones that, you know, I have to put my bias out there right away, Grindhouse Purgatory, printed by Pete Chirilla, and Mike White's Cashews du Cinemart. I think they're both great zines. I write for both of them. That's why I have my bias out there that both of these people are my friends, and I don't want people to think I'm just mindlessly plugging them.
Oh, okay, hang on. I will provide balance. Frankly, I think the two that you mentioned, I wasn't even paying attention to the name. They're both crap, and I hate them.
Cashiers do Cinemart and Grindhouse Purgatory.
See, they're crap, both of them. Don't go out and support these two guys that are friends of ours and that we actually really enjoy, but no.
But I know what you mean. They have real film criticism. I mean, Pete's is a little angrier than Mike's, but, you know, that's the difference in their personalities. Whereas when you look at those compared to the movie magazines of today, the movie magazines of today borderline on propaganda.
There are a lot of, publishing a magazine is not cheap.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What's your definition between a magazine then and a fanzine?
Okay.
Because fanzine has been used in the last 3 or 4 years as a derogatory term. Whenever someone doesn't like, even if it's something like Videoscope, which is a real magazine with a staff and everything, they will, they panned my movie? Oh, they're just a fanzine. Fanzine is a derogatory term now.
That's because people, fanzines that have been published in the past, and this is changing, but fanzines were, they're a slice of the zine scene where you have blinders on. As a perfect example, there were quite a few Star Wars fanzines that started up or grew even more popular when the prequels came out.
I was going to say approaching 1999. I remember a lot of those.
Approaching 1999, we had a lot of those. And then Phantom Menace hit, and the ones with integrity kind of went, we're done.
I can't give this a good review.
Yeah. And then the fanzines that, you know, Lucas can do no wrong. And you know, he can do no wrong. They have blinders on and they don't see they don't criticize. They just overly praise. And that to me is a fanzine. Anything that has a blinders on, legitimate criticism, good or bad, doesn't make you a fanzine.
But the way Eli Roth uses it. When a magazine gives him a positive review, it's a magazine. Negative review is, this is a fanzine. He uses it in a derogatory term because then that way he can dismiss it as, well, this was just a fan that didn't get it, a fan of horror films. But then doesn't that bring up the larger question then? Well, shouldn't you have a fan-based magazine if you're, you know, talking about music or movies or whatever? Or would you just rather have some guy who doesn't care one way or the other reviewing the movie? Which has more integrity is my question to you.
I think it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a legitimate, non-biased review that will tell you about a film being a film, looking at The Phantom Menace. If you're looking for, if you're not sure if you want to see this Star Wars film, okay, and you go to a non-biased, non-interested individual who went, I went and saw it, and yeah, Jar Jar Binks is kind of racist, and then we see that Watto is kind of a Jew, and I see this stuff happening, and really the film is kind of boring and filled with politics, and the kid that played Anakin isn't all that, and this really isn't a very good film. That's a non-passionate negative review. Then you have the fanzine review of, if you go on the positive side, Lucas can do no wrong. Oh my God, new Star Wars. The effects are incredible. You look at
Jar
this stuff.
Jar was funny. He stepped into poopy.
Yeah, Jar Jar was hilarious. We loved his accent, and then his tongue went all crazy. The pod racing was incredible. I felt like I was in the pod and being
now
there.
Now this is pod racing.
And yeah, and Watto was hilarious creature, and you know, we have all these new creatures, and the CGI is amazing. That's bad on the positive side. Yes, it's a positive review, but it's not constructive criticism. On the negative review, if you have an anti-Lucas, you just go, this is just, you know, this is just trash. I look up on the film and I just see toys that Lucas is going to be selling toys, and it was obviously for kids, blah, 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 blah.
But at the same time then, Scott, why should you have to provide balance if there is no need for it? For instance, I think The Phantom Menace is one of the worst mainstream films made in the last 25 years. So why should you have to find something positive to say about it if you truly, this film fucking raped my childhood? Why should you saying that put you, oh, it's just a fanzine, if there was nothing good from it?
I am a believer that there is no movie made where there is nothing good of it. I think that there is
Transformers, Dark of the Moon.
There is still something, I'm still trying to find it, but there's got to be something good. You know, you can compare it to the last ones and go, okay, this is
Highlander,
greatest,
the source. Oh, I dare God. Yeah, I'm calling your bluff, motherfucker.
I'm
Highlander, the source.
Give me time on that one. But the truth is, I think that there is a difference. It depends on what you're looking for. A lot of people that read fanzines have already made up their mind, and that's why they read the fanzine.
So they're looking for validation of their
opinion.
Yeah,
they're looking for validation of their opinion. They've got the same blinders on, positive or negative. They've got the same blinders on that the writers do. Versus a zine, which... You know, maybe there's a zine that goes, you know what? I had such high hopes for The Phantom Menace. I was so happy to see that Star Wars was coming back and I was going to get my childhood. But I looked up on the screen and all I saw were toys, and Jar Jar was racist, and Watto was a Jew, and it was just CGI everywhere for the sake of there being CGI, and Lucas has lost his touch.
So then why is fanzine a derogatory term now?
Because
it's
almost a dismissive term, because fanzine implies that they have blinders. That's what I'm saying.
But it also means that they understand.
Let's say the
horror genre. If you've got just some average guy off the street who is not a horror movie fan at all, and you set them down in front of an Eli Roth film, he may not see all the cliches, all the flaws, all the horrid dialogue
right. In
an Eli Roth film the way a horror fan will.
Right.
So in essence, won't a horror fan be more honest about that film than an outsider?
No, I don't know if it's more honest, but it's going to be...
More understanding then.
More
insightful, understanding.
More
yes.
insightful. It might be more insightful. But to me, you can have a horror movie zine, and that's not a fan zine. If you have an Eli Roth zine, and you know by reading this zine or by seeing some of the stuff that he's said about Eli Roth movies, you go, okay, he's got blinders on. According to this writer, Eli Roth can do nothing wrong. Teenagers going and partying and getting killed in interesting ways is the best ever.
Official magazines. Doctor Who, Walking Dead, Star Trek, Star Wars, they have their official magazines fully endorsed by the production studios. Rarely ever say anything negative. That would be propagandist almost, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
And yet they're official magazines that are official propaganda magazines for whatever their given product is, isn't
it? That's the job of... Whenever I see the official magazine of blah... That just tells me, okay, this is an advertisement.
That they want me to pay for.
Right. And the official magazines have their place because, okay, the official Doctor Who magazine might have behind-the-scenes stuff that others don't have access to.
But at the same time, aren't those essentially fanzines? Just official fanzines?
Yeah. Fanzines with bigger production service, but they've got the same blinders on.
But they also have the bottom line to answer to, because they need to keep the studio happy to get that behind the scenes access to Doctor Who that another magazine doesn't have. Whereas just a zine, they're just looking at it and going, okay, they just, this Doctor Who sucks.
Josh, hence the blinders.
But I don't even know if those are blinders, though. I think that is, I'm choosing not to see what I don't want to see.
That's exactly.
No, because blinders are, I can't see the bad or the good, depending on which side you're on. The willful ignorance, I think, is actually worse. I think that's a larger crime.
You're putting blinders on by choice, that's all.
But to me, I think that's worse, because you're choosing to do it instead of not noticing that it happened. True. Does that make sense?
True, but if I'm a Doctor Who fan and I know that this official magazine has...
Exclusive photos, or, you know,
who Matt Smith's first interview was with, but let's say Matt Smith does his first interview with the official Doctor Who magazine. I'm going to go to them and I'm going to, but going into a piece of print like that, you know what you're walking into, especially if it says, you know, official PlayStation magazine. Hey, these people probably are going to bash some Xbox.
Well, what about the bias between the difference between magazines and fanzines, or just zines in general, by the professional community? Because I know, especially within the horror community, the sci-fi community more so, actually, if you're trying to get an interview with some big actor, let's just say for the sake of argument, you want to interview Nicolas Cage and you really think you have a shot at getting this interview, okay?
Okay.
You know what his agent will say? Send me a request on the official letterhead from the editor.
Right.
Well, a fanzine doesn't have that.
Exactly.
Because so basically what they're saying is, you're not real. You're not worth talking to.
Right.
And I think that is a bias on the side of those in whatever your given industry is.
Because those
you don't matter.
Those in the industry are looking for the most effective output.
What they don't realize is the zine, the underground, is the most effective. Because, I mean, yes, you're not going to hit as large of an audience.
Stop.
But you're going to hit
right there. That's the difference.
But you're going to hit a more passionate audience.
Doesn't matter. We want money, and we want the most money we can. We want to hit the most people and bring the most people into our movie. I don't care how passionate you... I'm making Lord of the Rings. I don't care how passionate of a Tolkien fan you are. I've got you. You're coming to see it because you're a passionate fan. Okay? What I'm going after are the people that are like, I don't know, Lord of the Rings, that's a whole bunch of elves and weird stuff. I want to market to them, which means I want the biggest audience I can get across all kinds of passions.
So pandering.
Yes.
And I can't accept that, you know, because I don't remember.
I don't care if you can accept it or not. That's the way advertising works.
Because I don't remember what celebrity I was trying to get an interview with. And it might have been Stephen King. I mean, his assistant was very nice, so I'm not bashing his assistant or Stephen King or anything, okay? I think it was Stephen King I tried to get an interview from, and they said, we only do interviews with magazines or websites that have X number of circulation or X number of, you know, visitors per day.
Right.
And you're under that. And it's like, well, that's a little arrogant almost, I think.
No, it's effective advertising. Okay. If you're a huge Stephen King fan and you know that whatever book Stephen King puts out, you're going to go buy it and read about the monster and the scary children and the big dome over the city or whatever the hell it is.
Big dome over the city was stupid.
And it's coming back.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I know that you're going to go get it. As an agent and as an advertiser, I want to get out to Sally Housewife, who could pick up a Stephen King book, or she could pick up a Dean Koontz book, or she could pick up something else. I want to get to her and go, no, you want the Stephen King book. That's my job as an agent. That's my job as an advertiser. That's why you can have those standards, especially when it comes to the big puppies. You can have those standards. And so you're getting passion and stuff like that confused with advertising. They're not the same thing.
I just think it's arrogant that we don't want to talk to you because, going back to the derogatory term, you're a fanzine. I had one interview request. We don't do fanzine interviews. And I'm like,
it's a waste of my time. Because anybody that picks up your zine, I know, is already a fan of me. I'm going to be talking to them. Yes, it would be a nice thing to do. Is it going to bring me anybody new? Is it going to get me into anybody else's pocketbooks?
No. I can't remember exactly who I was going after that gave me the fanzine thing. But it was somebody who hasn't made a movie in a while. And, you know, the pretty much classic movies that, you know, only hardcore fans are going to know. And he kind of gave me that same line you did. And I was thinking of responding to him, well, Entertainment Weekly, and that they don't want to talk to you. They're not beating down your door. We're offering you a chance to get some publicity out about your movies, and you're, no, I'm going to hold out. Entertainment Weekly will come to me at some point. I'm going to wait for them. I'm going to wait.
And that's that may be a, you know, if you're constantly doing that.
But that's an arrogance on their side that... So I what? I find almost offensive. I find that's an almost offensive level of arrogance.
I don't. I really don't. And because I don't know if that was the author. I don't know, or the artist, like I said, whatever. I can't remember. Author, the artist, the actor, whatever.
I send out so many interview requests. It's insane.
Or other things beginning with A. I don't know if it was them. I don't know if it was their publishing house. I don't know if it was their agent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's kind of an arrogance, but sometimes you got to have those things, and it's weird. I know where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with you on the fact that it's there, but I can understand where they're coming from too.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying with the zine scene. This was fans talking to other fans of metal, talking to other fans of metal, fans of this new Riot Girl, talking to other fans of this new all-girl metal scene, fans of alternative, fans of horror, talking to other fans of horror. These are fan networks. These are not ways for the Tolkien heavy metal band, Tolkien-influenced heavy metal band.
Hey, Christopher Lee fucking put out a heavy metal album, so that there is that. I'm just saying that what you just suggested actually does exist.
Oh,
he's
not alone. There are tons of metal bands that do albums based on.
Yeah, but he's
Tolkien,
actually Saruman doing a metal album. That exists.
What I'm saying is, they're not trying to talk to other fans because they're already fans. They're trying to talk to, again, Sally Housewife. Maybe they're watching NBC Today.
And
in
see,
the morning
that was where Warner Brothers destroyed DC Comics. We're sick of only making comics for comic book fans. We want people who don't read. Oh shit! You mean that backfired? Oh no!
But that's what they were doing,
right? And I think that's both a corporate arrogance and corporate stupidity. But you know, I just want to say I want to plug Grindhouse Purgatory, Razor Cake, and Cashews Do Cinemart. I think they're all great zines, and they really should be checked out. I think you can get all three at Amazon. So,
and if you guys know of any smaller zines specifically within a community or within, like I said, they're
grab copies and send it to us.
Yeah, we'd love to see, especially if they're floating around academia and they're obviously put together. You know, maybe it's some new subversive media. If you're seeing the Revenge of Print come back, tell us about it.
And send it to us. I mean, you can contact us at 1201beyond@gmail.com to get the address. But I collect these. I love this shit, man.
Yeah. And like I said, please go to our Patreon page. Become a patron.
And
become a patron for us.
And adamandeve.com.
Adamandeve.com. We also have Amazon suggestions at 1201beyond.
Yep.
And there we go. So thanks a lot for joining us, guys. I hope you don't mind Josh and I rambling on about zines for almost an hour.
Well, I think it was somewhat informative, and hopefully people are going to go check out some of the ones.
I hope so. And do me a favor, and if you're at all interested in 90s culture, especially if you weren't part of 90s culture, check out Mondo 2000 and Ray Gun and some of the other publications that we don't see too much anymore.
Grab the old, try and find the old film threats from the Chris Gore era before LFP
definitely
took it over.
Definitely.
They're awesome.
But nonetheless, thanks a lot for joining us, guys. We will see you again next week.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.